factors: learning to adapt to the changes in the market, learning to eliminate that which does not work, and further developing our trading skills. Placing too much emphasis on our results just causes unnecessary anxiety. The bottom line is that if we are trading well, working hard, and spending all of our mental energy to get better as traders, then the results will follow. Percentage returns are not a relevant metric for us as intraday traders. I didn't have a clue this was the case when I first interviewed with SMB. I remember Bella just rolling his eyes at this question from me. I guess as an engineer and math geek, I just wanted to know all the little details. The numbers that G-Man uses here are possible only because we actively trade stocks in play. With very little buying power, we are able to book sizable profits. Stocks in play offer us more opportunities and trades that we have to hold for only short periods of time. Opportunity all day and all the time. Dr. Steenbarger wrote a blog in August 2009 about the limited opportunities that he was seeing for day traders. Why day trading stocks in the U.S. is an increasingly limited proposition. Our desk reads Dr. Steenbarger so religiously that I received 2 emails before the open from our guys, nervous about our future opportunities because of his spot-on blog. I swear I thought these early AM emailers thought we were going to have to pack up and head to Hong Kong imminently. But this blog and the subsequent emails demonstrate the power of stocks in play. No one on the street who was intraday trading was making money, as Dr. Steenbarger astutely proffered. Large proprietary traders were not making money. Most hedge fund traders were not making money. But we were. It was a tough month for those whose strategy relies on the market moving significantly. It was also tough for those who trade only certain sectors or baskets of stocks that lacked interest during this month. But it was not for me or those whom I had trained. Frankly, August 2009 was our best month of the year. And again, this is because we trade stocks in play. A last week in August to remember. August is historically uneventful. I went on StockTwits TV in August 2009 and said the same thing. I wrote in my blog, Vacation Chop, that you ought to take a break. I suggested that the last week in August or the first week in September are generally excellent weeks to vacation. I have some new information. Steve has written many excellent blogs on stocks in play. Our trading philosophy as short-term intraday traders is to find the stocks that are moving and use the trading setups that work best with these stocks. The advantage of this strategy is that we can count on one hand the days that do not offer opportunity in a given year. To be more accurate, we can count on one hand in the past 3 years the trading days that have not offered opportunity. And a week in August 2009, a week that has been traditionally slow, was the best week we had all that year. Huh? Bella, did you just say that you guys had a killer week the last week in August 2009? But the market did not move. It was the last week of the trading summer. Everyone was on vacation working on everything not related to trading. Young traders were in the Hamptons hitting on the models. Oh, to be young again. Dads were catching up on important family time. People were having fun. Traders were not trading, Bella. What the hell is wrong with you? The huge advantage of trading stocks in play is that you only need one stock to be in play. Not only that, but you need only one stock to be in play for a few days. And we saw that in the last week of August 2009. We saw this with AIG. See figure 7.3 on your bonus material. We saw this in the last 20 minutes into the close on a Wednesday, all day on a Thursday, and again all day on a Friday, and then the following week. Our desk made some serious chops. A favorite baseballism heard on a baseball broadcast is, "You see something new every time you come to the ballpark." I went to the new Yankee Stadium during this same August 2009, and saw a grown man eat 4 sausage dogs in one sitting. Does that count? This last week in August 2009, we again saw something new in the markets. A last week in August that offered memorable opportunity. I had planned to take Tuesday through Friday off from trading that week and focus on all things partner. And then came AIG in the last 20 minutes on a Wednesday, showing us the face of opportunity. I formulated a plan B. Plan B was all day trading all the time in AIG. Good plan B. G-Man had planned a trip to Great Adventure for that Friday with a mess of the guys. Trip canceled. Profitable decision. Like in professional basketball, there are runs in our sport. There are days that can make your week. There are weeks that can make your month. There are months that can make your year. This August 2009 was a month to make your year. If you missed it, you may have missed the best trading of the year. And this is part of the huge disadvantage of what we do. You have to be connected to the markets and ready to cancel plans when tremendous trading opportunities visit. Trade with an open mind at all times. Expect the unexpected. Just because every August I've ever traded was slow does not mean there would not be opportunity in my 12th August of summer trading. And this is straight out of the Black Swan. We overvalue what we know and undervalue what we do not know. 11 straight years of a quiet last week in August does not mean this year will be similar. During September of 2009, I was on the trading floor of an excellent prop floor the day before Labor Day weekend. One of their floor leaders got up and started lecturing his traders. "Anyone who is trading is overtrading. It is not worth trading." These traders focused on a basket of stocks and waited for them to hit certain prices that offered them an advantage. They were basket traders. And on this trading day before a holiday, there was nothing for them to trade. I checked in with Steve to see how we were doing. He did not pick up his phone. Steve then sent me a text message. "Sorry, I am trading. AIG is really in play. We are killing it again." While the leadership at one reputable firm was scolding its traders to do nothing, my partner wouldn't answer my phone call because he was saturated in trading opportunity. It is just so rare for us not to find trading opportunities because we focus on stocks in play. On another day, I was at a remote location during the summer of 2009 doing firm business. I opened my risk monitor to check what our guys were trading. They had moved away from AIG and were trading FAS and FAZ. I shot G-Man an email. "Get our guys back in AIG. It is still in play." Apparently, on this same day, Steve was trading, remarking every 5 minutes, "Watch AIG," and "AIG is really good again." AIG had started slowly this morning, so most of our traders searched for new opportunities. But they just needed to be more patient. The action would return soon to AIG, like Die Hard 2. Our desk was making some money in FAS and FAZ, but not anything like they had in AIG the past few weeks. G-Man got them back into AIG, and our better traders crushed the close in AIG again. This would not have been the case if they continued with FAS and FAZ. Load the boat. One of my favorite sayings from back in the day is, "Load the boat." During my first year of trading, we would search for the strongest tech stocks into the close and load the boat. This means take a huge position. G-Man likes to say, "If this stock holds above resistance, I'm going to buy unlimited." Unlimited. Yeah, right. That scares me a little when he says that. This is not a video game here, G-Man. But you get the point. There are times when we want to be uber aggressive. And those times with stocks in play offers the highest win rate and risk reward for the intraday trader. After we find a stock in play, we then watch it trade. We watch the order flow. We search for points of inflection. We want to see the buyers and sellers come together and battle it out. We want an epic battle. The bigger the battle, the more we expect the stock to move after the buyer or seller has won. We had such a setup in AIG in August 2009. AIG was trading in a range. AIG could not trade below 40.80 or above 41.50. AIG had traded strongly into the close the day before. It rose 5-plus points in the last 20 minutes of trading. AIG gapped up on the open. It pulled back slightly and found support at 40. AIG found more support at 40.80 and then resistance at 41.50. See figure 7.4 on your bonus material. Our intraday fundamentals told us AIG had room to run since it was again in the news. Everyone had an opinion on its worth. Its volume was tremendous, and its short interest was high. Heck, I even had an opinion and was quoted in thestreet.com. Investors hope that if the two are on good terms, it could mean Greenberg will be willing to help the new CEO, who has more than enough on his plate, Mike Bellafiore, a trader and partner at SMB Capital, said. Did I say that? What does that even mean? Anyway, AIG was in play and had room to run. And when AIG got above 41.50 and held above this intraday resistance level, I loaded the boat, and I held for multiple points. The buyers had won the battle. My risk reward was tremendous. AIG was holding above 41.50. And let me say this, not quoted in thestreet.com. What a chop. Consistency. Let's bring in my partner Steve and let him explain in his own words how trading stocks in play improve your consistency as an intraday trader. SMB Capital trades stocks in play. Our traders are taught how to find such stocks. And during our SMB morning meeting, we review the best stocks in play for a particular trading day. Over the past few years, I've had quite a few conversations with interviewees, including experienced traders, about this core trading philosophy. Some don't seem to grasp the importance of this principle. Let me explain. Your ability to make money consistently as an intraday trader relies on your high daily win rate. If you ask any professional trader how many days they are net positive each month, they can give you that figure. It is between 80 to 90% for almost all successful traders. A few on our desk are consistently above 95%. Think G-Man. How can professional traders have such a high win rate? There are three basic reasons for such a high level of success. One, they develop a skill set over time that allows them to get in and out of stocks efficiently. Two, they develop pattern recognition skills that enable them to accurately assess their risk versus reward. Three, they are in the right stocks. The right stocks are those that we have identified as stocks in play. These stocks will have greater order flow than normal. This does several things that gives you an advantage. One, increased order flow increases liquidity, which allows you to risk less on each entry and exit from a position. Two, the greater order flow creates additional volatility, which leads to many favorable risk-reward scenarios during the day. And three, the large number of orders will overwhelm the dopey algorithmic trading programs, which results in a stock moving more cleanly. If a stock is in play, then there is a 95% chance that I will make money trading it. During our SMB AM meeting on Friday in December 2008, we highlighted Research in Motion as a stock in play. 19 out of 22 traders were net positive trading RIM. I can even make 3 or 4 losing trades in a row. But by the end of the day, I will be presented with so many trading opportunities that I inevitably finish positive in the stock for that day. Let me offer the example of another day in December 2008 when I traded Monsanto and Apple. See figure 7.5 on your bonus material. Both were in play, and I had no difficulty making money in them. There is one other point I share about stock selection. I am sometimes unable to identify a stock that fits these criteria for being in play, and we will trade an ETF or a momentum stock because both have a tendency to make several good moves each day. But my first choice is always to be in a stock in play. Earning Stocks. As I mentioned, Steve has written extensively since our blog began regarding stocks in play. During earnings season, there are many in-play stocks to choose from each day. Traders should choose no more than two or three of these stocks each day to focus on. You can make a lot more money trading one or two stocks well than trading many stocks poorly. Prior to the start of earnings season in April 2009, Steve was trading FAZ almost every day. But he made it clear to our desk that once earnings season began, his focus would change to stocks with fresh news. This is where a skilled trader's edge exists. The increased order flow in stocks with fresh news creates greater liquidity, intraday volatility, and great risk-reward setups that are easily recognizable. During seven trading days in April 2009, Steve was able to find a new in-play stock each day. His worst day during that period was finishing up over $3,000. Certainly his trading skills played a large part in his success each day, but a bigger contributor to his success was proper stock selection. Some of the stocks he traded during this time period included RIM, Apple, QCOM, AXP, GS, MS, and Amazon. Take a look at figure 7.6 on your bonus material, a chart of QCOM from the day it released earnings. Even novice traders would probably have crushed QCOM if they were aware of the resistance levels at 4260 and 43. Take a look at figure 7.7 on your bonus material, an Amazon chart. How difficult do you think it was to make money when it traded above prior resistance of 83? Not very. The importance of picking the right stocks. In this section, we'll hear two opposing case studies, Mr. Discipline and The Favorite. These are real-life examples of why picking the right stocks is paramount to your trading success. Mr. Discipline, stuck picking the wrong stocks. One of the most disciplined traders I know was outstanding at playing uptrends. Aside from his market prowess, he didn't have an ounce of fat on his body. In 2 years, I never once saw him eat anything for lunch save a salad. Anyway, he would find stocks off of the filters that were trending up intraday and ride them patiently until they ran out of gas. This experienced trader, let's call him Mr. Discipline, was like a great jockey riding his stock for everything it would give him. During some markets, Mr. Discipline outperformed the desk. But then the subprime mortgage mess hit, and most on our desk were trading CFC, Countrywide, MBI, MBIA, and ABK, Ambac Financial. CFC would move 8 to 10 points intraday, and this experienced trader was still glued to his filters looking for his uptrending stocks. We were short, long, short, long, then short, flipping our positions, just trading the crap out of these stocks. By the end of the day, I felt like I was suffering from vertigo. All the movement and intense focus just left me dizzy. On countless days, I would shake my head and blink to keep from losing my equilibrium. At the end of the trading day, you had nothing left. Sessions that left you so wiped, making it to your couch was a major physical accomplishment. Trading days where going to the bathroom would cost you thousands of bucks, literally. Mr. Discipline watched in disbelief as new and lesser traders skyrocketed past his results. Plus, he was starting to lose money. He had just gotten married, and I could sense that maybe the instability of intraday trading was not a good fit for his life presently. But he was also exceptionally stubborn. I had a talk with him about trading stocks in play. He was not interested. He did not like the way they moved. They were too erratic. I told Mr. Discipline that he was a solid trader, and if he tried, then he could make this adjustment. He was an excellent trader, but not a good listener. Mr. Discipline was clearly more interested in proving his theories correct than making money. He merely tolerated people like me for offering alternative suggestions and ensured his access to the markets. Mr. Discipline continued to struggle. I thought I would try again to talk with him. We were a young desk, and we needed an older, experienced guy like him to succeed and become a leader. He was one of the better traders we had at the time. And really, this was so silly. All he needed to do was get in there and trade these stocks that were moving. They were hard and fast, but there was so much opportunity. His mentality was like the basketball player insisting he can take the ball to the hole against a star shot blocker. Shot blocked. Shot blocked. Shot blocked. Great, I thought, if I were the star shot blocker. I always love playing with guys like this. But, unfortunately, this guy was on my team. Mr. Discipline thought these stocks were too erratic and fast? Too erratic and fast? Are you kidding me? Maybe it's just me, but I want the ball in my hands in crunch time. I want my trading skills tested. I love being challenged by the hardest stocks when they are littered with opportunity. These are the days that I live for as a trader. I pray to the trading gods for volatility like those subprime mortgage days. Recall that I didn't know a thing about CFC and MBI before the mess. I had never traded them. I did not know how the specialists treated the orders. Honestly, I had only a vague understanding of what a subprime mortgage was. I did not know the fundamentals of the companies. I had not reviewed their charts until the day I traded them. But I am a trader. I am not an analyst writing research reports for the public to read. And I trade stocks that are moving. Give me the information that I need as a trader. Technical levels, news, average daily volume, short interest, average daily range, and I will go forth and trade. I learn very quickly. At the end of the day, I am going to figure out these stocks. As uncomfortable as they are initially to trade, think jumping out of an airplane with just the faith that your parachute will open. I take the plunge, and if they are moving, I am going to make an awful lot of money. During our second talk, I said much to the same effect, but Mr. Discipline wasn't really listening. I thought I gave a great speech. There was no "ask what you can do for your country" JFK moment, but still my points were persuasive. He was just not someone who learned from others. He was who he was. My words were as effective as taking my head and banging it against a wall. He thanked me for the pep talk and walked out. The pep talk? He thought I was giving him a pep talk? I was giving him a way to save his career. I was offering him a way to avoid pushing a bunch of papers around a desk for the next 20 years. Or how to avoid getting on the phone every day and hawking some financial product that he knew was garbage to some strangers whom you would never want to talk to you. I was helping him stay in the arena. The trading arena where every day is new and your heart pounds with excitement with your biggest trades. I would color my hair gray if I thought this would keep me in the trading game. I would trade a toothpick company if you told me this is where the action was. But I guess that is why I am still trading. It never really had to end for Mr. Discipline. He just decided his time was over and he would not make the adjustment. The market does not reward stubbornness. The market is not interested in how you wish stocks would trade. You adapt to the market. You do what the market demands. And that is the way it will always be. Losing Mr. Discipline was a tough loss for SMB. I had a few too many vodkas with not enough tonic the night after he left. But an empty trading seat gets quickly filled. New traders filled in the void. Developing traders got better. Most importantly, SMB headed in a new direction. Younger, more agile, and hungry to crush these subprime lenders. Skilled and confident enough to crush the stocks in play. The favorite. The importance of being in the right stocks. For our next case study, the favorite, stocks in play turned around his trading career. The favorite joined our firm after being dismissed from a highly regarded prop firm known for its intraday momentum prowess. He was surrounded by some of the better prop traders on the street at his last firm, so I knew he had some game. It was just a matter of putting him in the position so that his skills would be rewarded. As way of background, the favorite is one of the favorite traders amongst his peers, hence his given nickname here. The favorite is also the only one who calls me Michael, besides my mom, these days. When he is in a stock in play, and that stock moves suddenly, you can hear him smack his desk with both fists and exclaim, "Oh!" This "oh" just comes out of nowhere from a person whose English is not fully developed, which is also amusing since he has been in the States for years now, is extremely bright and likable, yet has not improved his English, and is generally quiet. Our desk erupts in laughter when silence is met with the favorite's out of left field, "Oh!" More amusingly, when the favorite makes a good trade, he moves his head forward and back like a clubby bopping to the latest hip-hop music. The favorite had a great run with us when he first started, trading the momentum in gold while it was in play. His results were in the top third of our firm. I wondered what the hell his former firm was thinking, getting rid of this powerhouse. But then his trading reality appeared. The favorite started to struggle for a few months, like an unwanted hurricane sweeping through your favorite beach destination. The favorite went from one of the best to one of the worst traders on our desk. G-Man and I checked his work. He was trading gold every day, and it was now not as in play. I sent the favorite an email instructing him not to fall in love with gold stocks and to find better stocks. Yet he kept trading gold. The favorite kept struggling, so I forged another intervention. I pulled him behind closed doors. I noted his superior momentum trading skills, and I explained that he was not taking advantage of these skills by trading gold when it was not as in play. The favorite sat, listened, and ended the meeting with, "Thank you, Michael." I thought I had gotten through to him. No dice. The favorite continued with his gold bug like some end-of-the-world conspiracy theorist, hoarding and converting his cash to hard assets. He continued to struggle. How was I going to get through to this young man? I have to share this anecdote before we move forward. Back in the day, I sat next to gold prop traders who were the hardcore end of the U.S. theorists. Present-day parallels were openly discussed with the end of the Roman Empire. Their best example was the growth of porn with Roman excesses. One of these traders got on the phone to call his bank and asked, "If you go out of business, will my gold plates be secure?" You see, the Armageddon scenario is for U.S. dollars to be worthless, so you will want gold plates delivered to you. And since the banks then would be bankrupt, would his gold be safe? How did he know? Okay, back to the favorite. I had another idea. I moved his seat. I moved the favorite to the back of our trading firm and surrounded him with our best momentum traders, who were crushing FAS at the time. This kind of worked as he stopped losing money, but he still was not trading as well as I thought he could. I talked with one of our better momentum traders and asked him to speak with the favorite. And I sent another email making my best argument for the favorite to get into the stocks in play and maximize his superior momentum trading skills. Finally, one of his new deskmates got through to him. The favorite started focusing on the AIGs, and in a former era, CFCs, and most in-play stocks. He leapt to the top of our leaderboard, where he belonged, and he stayed there. It only took, what, 5 months to get him in the stocks in play? But I'm glad I did. Black box algorithms are nothing to fear. In July of 2008, I received a GChat message from a future trader, Reader Carter, who was interested in the impact of black boxes, or algorithms, on intraday trading. I had heard Carter's concerns from other future traders. Some believe that black boxes will rule trading and eliminate the intraday trader. I received this antisocial email from Reader Gutless, who of course sent me this note from a fake email account. I hate to ask a dumb question here, but how come you all are using people to trade instead of computers? Aren't you kind of stuck in the Stone Age here? There is all this talk about how black boxes are the end for intraday traders. To me, this is simply an excuse for not doing well. I heard the same thing when pricing went to decimalization in 2001. I heard the same when the market went hybrid in 2006. Anyway, Here are my thoughts on black boxes and how to beat them. This is just another reason why you must be in the stocks in play. A few thoughts. I have heard this argument for the past 5 years, and I am still trading profitably, and our desk just had its best week ever in August 2009. Black boxes have made intraday trading more difficult. You must be more selective with your trading, but if you are, there are still many plays where you will have an edge. A momentum trade in a stock in play is a perfect example. If you are not selective, then the black boxes will certainly take your money. A higher percentage of black boxes fail than traders. Too many black boxes are written by programmers who have not learned how to actually trade and thus are destined to fail. Throw those nerdy quants in a futures pit and ask them to yell out bids and offers, and they'd look like they were about to be run over by the 6'6" ex-NFLer standing next to him. You can't just crunch numbers and expect to be a profitable trader. As mankind has proven time and time again, human emotion will trump even the best of automated intentions. And to understand that past data may not help you in a current market. You must be able to identify the different algorithmic programs so that you can trade against them. This takes some experience, good mentoring, and practice. I have seen many black boxes get destroyed, and many that certainly will. The most disappointing black box program today is what we call the Buy the New Low program. Actually, I have a fundamental problem with this black box as it disobeys fundamental trading principles. Don't fade a weak stock. A stock makes a new intraday low. So then many day traders get short and play the downside momentum. The program buys the shorts from the day traders and then pushes the stock higher, causing all of the day traders to cover. The problem is that this program was turned on often in Fannie Mae and Lehman Brothers and Freddie Mac during their free fall in the late summer of 2008. Oops. The stocks were broken technically. And not only did intraday traders hit the new intraday low, but so did huge institutional sellers. Thus, these programs were obliterated. Programs should be respected, but not feared. Anyone who has created a profitable black box is a genius. It is really that difficult to build one. Black boxes have to be turned on and off, just like bids need to be placed and withdrawn. And what works today may not work tomorrow. And because of this, black boxes can never completely rule trading. There will always be the need for the discretionary trader who understands when he has an edge to buy or sell. And the market is always changing such that it is impossible to program all of the different variables that eliminate the need for trader discretion. Black boxes will continue to become more prevalent. I have the utmost respect for those who have created successful ones. There is a fortune to be made in doing so. I know of one superior prop firm that started off the back of a few black boxes. But there isn't a program that can be developed to trade against the well-trained and disciplined trader. There are just too many variables in the markets. And I spend my day only making trades where I have an edge. If I recognize there are too many programs in a stock in order to gain an edge, then I move on. But, as some on my desk joke, I guess I am just a human black box. Black boxes can be frustrating to trade against. Some algorithmic programs are designed specifically to take the money of the intraday trader. For example, as an intraday trader, we may get long AIG if we notice SPY explode. A program may get turned on to short the buying in AIG as it predicts these buyers are short-term traders. So suppose Trader A gets long AIG at 3505, Trader B at 3506, Trader C at 3507, and Trader D at 3508. An algorithmic program is shorting our buys. But then AIG does not trade higher because the only real buyers are short-term traders. There is no huge order from an institution. And then when AIG ticks down, Trader A hits the stock at 35, loss of 5 cents. Trader B at 34.95, another loss. Trader C at 34.90, a bigger loss, and Trader D at $34.85, Ripper. All that has happened is that the program took the money out of the pockets of these short-term traders, me and my peers. And there are dozens of setups where algorithms are set up to take the money of what I call the weak-hand short-term trader. Traders only interested in holding if the stock ticks in their favor. Think of the Texas Hold'em player who plays only pocket aces or pocket kings. So intraday traders become frustrated, saying things like, "That is BS. I can't beat these freaking programs." But is that true? Yes, you cannot beat most programs if there is no real order flow. But you can if there are real orders behind certain moves. And in stocks in play, there is often real order flow. Let's take our previous example again. AIG is in play. We get long AIG when we notice SPY explode. A program may get turned on to short the buying in AIG as it predicts these buyers are short-term traders. So again, let's use the same traders and price points. Trader A gets long AIG at $35.05. Trader B at $35.06, and Trader C at $35.07, and Trader D at $35.08. An algorithmic program is shorting our buys. Ripper again, right? Not this time. Remember, with a stock in play, there is real order flow. Generally, when SPY explodes, a big order will flood the market and overpower the algorithms. So now, assuming this is not a trade to hold, Trader A will sell at 85 cents, Trader B at 93 cents, Trader C at 94 cents, and Trader D at 97 cents. Chop, 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 chop. And lifted straight from the cult classic movie Swingers, I ask, who's the big winner now? Now, with a stock in play, when we identify strength, the stock tends to trade higher. The programs cannot shake us or get lifted off the box by real buyers. So this is one more reason why we stick with stocks in play. And there is really a much larger lesson here. As an intraday trader, you can carp and complain about the annoying algorithmic programs developed to take your money. In their worst sense, they are predators and you are their game. If you allow them, they will take your money, or for purposes of expanding this analogy, they will eat you. But you have a choice. You can spend your energy complaining, or you can compete. And to compete means figuring out how to use the programs to your advantage. Example, riding a short squeeze of a program on the wrong side. Delicious. This means finding the spots where the algos cannot take your money, discovering stocks where you can beat the programs. As traders, we can spend months making a list of all the inequities in the markets. We can find examples where we get screwed that we can discuss with our drinking buddies all the way into an early diner breakfast after closing down a bar. Heck, we could probably even write an entire book about all things unfair to the intraday trader. I will not be writing that book. Where will that get you? What will that accomplish? How will that help you make money? As I said, you have a choice. The market is simply a pattern-solving exercise. The programs make it more difficult to decipher these patterns, but they do not make it impossible. Before programs, there might have been 3 sub-patterns per trading setup, and now there might be 6. And no matter how hard they make the markets for the intraday trader, there is always an edge to be found. When I first started, the markets were rigged by NASDAQ market makers. They paid billions in fines while they were lobbying the networks to put the word day in front of my job, though we were doing the same thing they had been doing for decades, save the rigging the markets part. And we still made a small fortune, and that's with transaction costs that were $30 per thousand, a cut of our trading profits, and a platform that could go down for hours without an ability to close our positions. There will always be obstacles. There will always be things unfair, and we ought to take steps to rid the market of these scams. But what we cannot do, what a trader must never do, is make excuses. As long as I have access to the markets, then I can find the patterns where I will have an edge. If some firm's PhDs want to screw me out of a few dollars here and there, That will not deter me. It is one thing for them to take my money outright. I cannot control every instance of that. But I can control how I react to these perceived unfairnesses. I can make sure I do not take myself out of the game for the trades where I have an edge, because I can more than account for the screw jobs with the patterns where I have an edge. The little gnats who take my money here and there on certain trades do not determine my future. And finally, as electronic traders, it is hypocritical to complain about algos. Algos are just an extension of technological advancement. We have access to the markets because of technological improvements. Our ability to trade actively in and out of stocks is the result of technology. In the future, I hope to gain access to more equity markets overseas. This, too, will only occur with technological breakthroughs. Also, there is nothing stopping my firm from creating black boxes, other than us. Shortening the learning curve. Trading stocks in play benefits the new trader because it offers more trading reps. Just like any job, when you start out anew, you lack experience. The more market patterns you see, the better. One of the huge benefits to new traders in the fall of 2008 was all of the market patterns they saw in such a short time span as the volatility index hit abnormally high levels. Dr. Momentum and Moneymaker from Chapter 1 benefited at the start of their trading career from markets that offered so many market patterns. This made them better faster. The volatility of the markets transformed one trading day into the equivalent of five trading sessions of market patterns. Well, this same principle applies with stocks in play for the new trader. Since you are trading a stock that is moving more intraday, you are seeing more market patterns, and as a result, you are gaining added experience over someone who might just be trading a basket of stocks. Using the five trading days equivalent from before, think of it as the difference between taking 250 free throws in your driveway before going into dinner instead of the normal 50, but in the same amount of time. Trading the stocks in play will speed up your learning curve. Superior trading skills to the rescue. When I am not out of the office doing partner-related things, you can hear me say on the desk from time to time, "This is not a good stock. It does not allow me to utilize my superior trading skills." I'm half joking, but entirely serious. I have developed tremendous trading skills. I can short. I can get long. I can play both sides of a stock. Remember, in the late 1990s, they didn't teach us how to short. Well, we didn't really have to. I have a trading playbook so thick with profitable trading setups that if I went through them here, all would undoubtedly find another author. It would take a painfully long period of time to sit through that explanation. If a stock is going to move significantly intraday, then I am almost always going to carve it up like a succulent Thanksgiving Day turkey. I can read the tape and find enough intraday plays where I possess a significant edge. And these can be shorts or longs. They can be longer-term intraday trades or quick ones. If a stock is just sitting there waiting for an order or not doing much, then I am not able to utilize my superior trading skills. That is no fun. And as Jay Thoma might say, that doesn't pay for my Porsche and house in the Hamptons. Finding stocks in play. Stocks in play generally have unexpected fresh news, either positive or negative. News that most interests me is higher margins, better sales than expected, or increased market share. I check the news on all stocks up or down 3+% pre-market. Stocks in play the day before often are still in play. Stocks near important support and resistance levels are also considered. I ask this simple question. If I was a hedge fund and a sales trader called me to pitch a trade in this stock, would I be interested? If so, then this stock will be in play. If we choose properly before the open, we often trade just one stock. If we choose very wisely, we often trade one stock for 3 days and squeeze every cent we can out of it. Short, long, light, loaded, millisecond holding periods, positions held all day. It's called trading. It's called trading is something Steve and I like to repeat on the desk over and over, almost like Nike's Just Do It. We choose our stocks before they open so we can best prepare. We find the levels on our charts and from our trading notes that are most important and consider the different ways the stock may trade. Now, often we don't know the stocks we are trading very well, so we must do research to ensure we are properly prepared. Remember from Chapter 5, The Butcher, failing to prepare is preparing to fail. We ferret out data about the stocks that is meaningful to us, such as average daily volume, short interest, important technical support and resistance levels, average daily range, etc. After all of our morning preparation, we determine which stocks out of about a dozen with fresh news are best to trade. We also use our filters selectively, most frequently when the market is very slow. In order to help, we use Trade Ideas. It is a very well-run company that has allowed SMB to do what we do. In fact, Trade Ideas is so on the ball that I once wrote a blog about trading V right on the open. I described the setup and how to trade this scenario. Lo and behold, David Afariat, who runs Trade Ideas, read the blog, created a new filter for these very setups, and posted a comment on my blog with a link to it. That is what I call adding value. So how do we ensure we are in the stocks in play? Before every open, every SMB trader submits his best trading idea to our AM ideas sheet. This is an internal document that all of our traders can access. Steve then reviews these ideas and chooses the best ideas from this batch. During our AM meeting, which begins at 8:30 a.m., Steve highlights the stocks that are best to trade. Steve will offer his analysis of how these stocks may trade. The trader who offered this idea educates the desk on the daily volume, important levels, news, and pre-market trading, etc. We also hold a midday meeting at 12:30 p.m. to discuss the stocks in play into the close. So after our SMB AM meeting and midday meeting, our traders are armed with the tools they need. We are then prepared to compete. If there is news in the middle of the day not covered in our AM meeting that will create a new stocks in play, we share this information immediately with each other. If an alert goes off on our trading platform indicating an important support or resistance level, then we yell this out as well. But almost always we chose one or two stocks to concentrate on for a trading day, and this stock is the only thing we trade or need to trade. And then we just carve it up. Chop. Experienced traders are hypersensitive about being in the right stocks. As we have learned, we are all just as good as the stocks we trade. A skill that too few developing traders have mastered is about to enter the room. Reading the tape is the first skill that new traders should master, the very first skill. Let me explain in the following chapter. Chapter 8. Reading the Tape. I meet too many new and developing intraday traders who think trading is just about learning technical analysis, reading charts, and loading up. Here's what I've heard some of them say. I can see everything that I need to from the charts. An amateur trader. I can't make much money reading the tape. A misinformed trader. I can't read the tape. A new trader making excuses. Reading the tape is extinct. An experienced trader who has given up, believing the quants have won. Reading the tape is for scalpers. It is for hyperactive, overly caffeinated, nicotine-addicted day traders exclusively. Someone who thinks my industry is a joke and probably works for a shop that would rather be right than make money. I need to find plays that I can hold to make real money. Another misinformed trader. Perhaps not an intraday one. Little do these guys know that reading the tape can enhance their P&L by many multiples. Some cannot read the tape at all. Others, perhaps you, may not even know what reading the tape is. They are that guy you see at your local driving range who only hits driver. There are a dozen other clubs in his bag, yet he falls in love with his driver. My trader's playbook is like that bag full of clubs, but I use every one of them. As in trading, you have to develop beyond just one skill, say technical analysis, and one of the most important is reading the tape. This skill will provide you with that elusive edge that traders always seek. Reading the tape is a skill that enables the intraday trader to predict more times than not whether a stock will trade higher or lower from a given price based on just examining the bids, offers, and prints. Some call it reading the level 2. The prints tell us where a stock is trading at a given moment and whether this action is on the bid or the offer. You will not always be able to tell a stock's next direction, but you will identify patterns where you can more than 70% of the time. Let me share a story with you. Back in the day, I went to our first firm party held to announce the big producers for the month and build comradeship amongst our traders. It might have been just an excuse for the firm to spend a small piece of the millions it was banking on us traders every month and for everyone to get drunk. Steve and I and the rest of our crew headed down to SPQR, a legendary Italian restaurant in Little Italy, where the firm provided everything on the menu plus an ocean of booze. I do not know what it is about traders, but give them something for free and you earn their everlasting loyalty. For a few months, anyway. Ever seen a trader when the free pizza shows up to the conference room? It's as if they just won the lottery. As if these traders can't drop a few bucks on some slices and Coca-Cola? Anyway, after eating too much pasta and talking to a bunch of rich 20-something traders, I myself was 20-something and not rich, I was ready to hear who were the top traders at the firm. I had some idea, but it is like American Idol. You think you know who is going to win, but you still might be surprised. Taylor Hicks beat Chris Daughtry? And it is always fun to see people recognized and happy to earn the spotlight. So, with my gut busting and anticipation mounting, the names and numbers started to be announced, starting at number 10. At 212,000 for the month, some Russian dude whose name was unpronounceable, even considering he was a top 10 trader. At 235,000 for the month, I had never seen this guy, but man, was he tanked. At number 8, Steve Spencer. Steve Spencer? Strange. That name sounds awfully familiar to my best friend from home. Did the firm have two Steve Spencers? And then Steve, sitting next to me, rose from his seat and lined up with the other big producers. How much did he just make? Holy cow! My best friend, who taught me how to play tic-tac-toe at sleepaway camp when we were 7, had just made over $200,000 for the month. This was a very different world from our Merlin the Magician days, and this was before the Internet.com explosion. During the Internet boom, circa 1998 to 2000, to make the top 10 at our firm, you usually had to make over $500,000. Our holiday parties were held in the grand ballroom of the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. Now that is a palace. And it was hysterical seeing some of the short, unattractive young kids walking around with tall, blonde, Eastern European fashion models. I wonder how that happened. I will let you figure that out. For fun, Steve bought one of the first plasma TVs, 50, for nearly $20,000. Now you can probably buy one at Walmart for $800. And that near $20,000 was on discount. Jay Toma bought a Porsche and a few apartments. Very, very smart, given the real estate boom that would soon rise in place of the dot-com bust. And we were all just reading the tape. There were no charts. CNBC was not broadcast on our trading floor. In fact, I'm not sure if we even had TVs anywhere in our space. Interestingly, during a meeting with management, Steve asked for CNBC to be broadcast on the floor. At times, there were funny moves in stocks that came from out of nowhere. Only later would we learn the news on stocks causing these strange moves. Steve's suggestion was dismissed without much comment. Just play the momentum. We don't need to know the news. And you know what? We really didn't need to know the news. because we could read the tape so well that news and charts were not really necessary. It was indeed a different era back then, but a skill learned that would not be lost. J. Thoma would eventually take a few years off from trading, start a private equity fund, and give bonds a shot to round out his trading. When he returned from the dark side, bond trading or anything other than equity trading for that matter, back to prop trading, in his first month he made more than anyone on our desk. Why? He had never forgotten his tape reading skills. In one of his blogs, Dr. Steenbarger talked about this skill. Dr. Steenbarger, a.k.a. the godfather of modern trading psychology, wrote, "My experience is that an understanding of and ability to read order flow is one important factor that separates the older, successful generation of day traders from the newbies who only know simple chart patterns and indicator readings. I am one from this older generation of intraday traders, but I'm not sure why Dr. Steenbarger had to remind me of my advanced age. And so I thought this old-timer, me, could share his thoughts on reading the tape and how it impacts the developing intraday trader. For years I have disappointingly heard developing traders state, 'I'm just going to focus on the charts going forward. I can't read the tape.' I have heard it too many times, and not one of these individuals, not one, became successful intraday traders." The second part of our training program is called Trader Development, after 5 weeks of training and now trading live. After the close, during an initiation of new trainees, Steve and I answered their questions and discussed what was important on day 6 of their live trading career. Oh, to be young again, I can't possibly recall what I was doing on day 6 of my trading career. One of our promising trainees discussed a trailing stop for a trade in MS. Trailing stop, I thought. I didn't authorize any trailing stops. What kind of amateur trading books have you been reading, young Skywalker? This was a red flag. My impression was this talented new trader had trouble reading the tape and was experimenting with these trailing stops to minimize this weakness. Experienced traders trading multiple positions can enter trailing stops, but I always advise new traders to trade with both hands on the wheel and enter limit orders. He was jumping the learning curve. I counseled this new trader to continue working on the skill of reading the tape and to sell the stock on the offer when the tape showed weakness, and I did so because this is what an older generation intraday trader, like myself, does. In addition, I offered an analogy about not learning how to read the tape. To me, not learning this skill is like a basketball player not working on his free throws. This baller just decides to keep clanging his free throws and give up some easy points. This same new trader offered a better analogy. Hey, we hire smart kids. Obviously, this analogy was much better than mine. In the future, I will take creative license to just use his idea as my own. After all, what is the point of being a partner if you can't steal the analogies from your trainees? His analogy? Not developing this skill is like the amateur golfer hitting only irons during his round because he never learns to hit driver. I like that. Still not convinced? Let's bring in some famous market players for further persuasion. Exhibit A. From Steve Cohen, one of the greatest traders ever, of SAC Capital. In Business Week's The Most Powerful Trader on Wall Street You've Never Heard Of. Everything I do today has its roots in those early tape reading experiences. Exhibit B. Jesse Livermore from Reminiscences of a Stock Operator, Lefevre 06. A battle goes on in the stock market, and the tape is your telescope. You can depend upon it 7 out of 10 cases. Exhibit C. Linda Rashke from the essay Tape Reading on TradersLog.com. If you can learn to follow the price action, you will be 2 steps ahead of the game. Exhibit D. Paul Tudor Jones in an interview for Institutional Investor magazine. At the end of the day, I am a slave to the tape and proud of it. Traders ask, how do I read the tape? After my first blog on reading the tape, I was left with a lot of questions from loyal readers. From Chad. Could you explain what you mean when you say read the tape? Watching price action? Could you give me an example of something you would watch for?